Right now we got someone special on the line. How you doing, Anthony?
I'm good.
Awesome. We're talking with Anthony Armstrong from the band Red. And first off, let's just get the elephant out of the room. There's a pandemic going on, and you guys released your album early. So tell us a little bit about that. Why was that decision made?
People are going nuts. They want some release. They want some music. They want something new instead of, you know, hanging with their kids all day. They want something fresh, I guess. So everybody was begging for it. So we said, you know what, let's just... I mean, it's a hard thing to do. When you have a scheduled release date, that's a hard date. You know, we're in conjunction with Apple Music, and there's a lot of outlets that have everything set up for it to happen. You know, the algorithms kick in at certain times. So it's like, when you do that, it's a lot of red tape. But we pitched the idea to our manager and said, hey, man, why don't we just try this a week early? Can we do that? And then it happened. So we were excited to announce that.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So, I mean, talking about the album, it take to make this.
I mean, it was a solid week, at least. I mean, maybe a week and a half, but it was cool.
I was like, wow, that's talent right there.
The first three songs were very early releases that we did with Evening Hate and From the Ashes. And then Sever, I guess, would be the most recent one. But the first two songs, they were 2019. We wrote those songs and wanted to release them, you know, systematically, you know, along, you know, every few months, release new content, just kind of keep stoking the fire with fans. But stoking the fire turned into a bonfire and then a house fire and a city on fire because people wanted a record. So it was something we honestly weren't prepared for. We're in the middle of trying to, you know, get our label started and all the politics and then stuff that goes with doing that, which we, you know, we were obviously new to that whole idea and a lot, and learned, you know, what we need, what we don't need, and how expensive it is. So we put a lot of money and effort time into that. But when fans started, you know, barking at us about the record, we were just like, you know what, we've made records our whole career. You know, let's see if we can do this and get it out in a, you know, decent time, decent fashion. You know, this is our new independent career. So we don't want to wait 2-3 years to give them new content. We got to give it to them
right.
Quickly. So, you know, we released mid 2019, started releasing some songs, and then we spent the rest of that year finishing up the record. So we had a lot of stuff in the can. You know, we were writing a lot to get those first two songs. You know, it's 20 or 25 ideas just to get two songs. So,
wow.
You know, we had a lot of stuff going in there. And a lot of those ideas, we don't just come up with ideas that we probably never use. Most times, everything we write is going to be used somehow, some way, because we just have a formula that we know works and at least works for Red, works for the Red sound. So,
mm-hmm.
But this time around, it was, you know, first indie release, a lot of fans wanted us to quote-unquote go back to our roots, which we never really felt like we'd left, but we had to do a lot of appeasing when it came to, you know, the label and having certain content that they needed. But I think that this time around was an amazing experience for us because we didn't have to do that this time. We got to write the record we wanted to write. So that's that. That's the short version.
That's awesome. Yeah, so with the album, you guys are released an independent album. And so for someone that's listening right now, what does that mean? What does independent mean? Does it restrict you? Does it give you more freedoms? Does it have any play on your music style?
It's more freedom.
Okay.
Yes, it's definitely more freedom. I would say financially it can be a bit of a bear, especially if a band is brand new. An indie career is not an easy thing. They like to call them DIY. DIY, they do it yourself. So it's kind of that structure. You know, you do everything on your own. But because Red has had a great career, you know, we were on the label for 12 years with Sony. So, you know, we've got a huge fan base and a lot of people that support us. And we've met a lot of people and networked with a lot of people throughout the years. So when we decided to do this, it made more sense to us because we had all the different, you know, departments that a label provides when you do sign. We had a way to you know, go through and hire and privately contract all those, you know, distribution and, you know, media and all that stuff. You know, we had the ability to do that. So that was the expensive part, is getting all those people on board. But we are the label. The money is ours. We spend the money the way we want to spend it. You know, when fans, we did our GoFundMe to start the label. And basically what happened was, fans don't normally understand this, but a label is just a bank.
Right.
Label gives you the money to make a record, and then they take the record and do what they want with it. Well, what we did with our GoFundMe was basically say, hey, we want to make a record. If you guys want it, buy it now. So all that's happening normally when you're on a label is that when you make a record or release it, the fans are paying back that debt to the bank, aka the label, and they think that that money goes to the band, and it doesn't. So so all we did was cut out the middleman and went straight to our fans and said, if you guys want to hear a Red record, you know, let us know. We're going to try and raise this amount of money and start a label and do a record at the same time. And we did. We raised the money. It took a while, and there were moments where we didn't think we would get it. But the last final push we made, it happened, and we had enough money to finish the record. And we just released it, so we're excited because it's been a good response, very good response so far.
Awesome. That struggle kind of goes into my next question. Did you guys run into like roadblocks musically while making this album, such as like connecting riffs with lyrics, and how did you overcome that?
Man, honestly, I don't want to sound overconfident, but we don't really run into roadblocks when we write records. We just don't. I think younger bands, you know, when they're still trying to, define who they are and what their sound is, may have, you know, issues with writing, but we just know what we want. We just know what Red should sound like, and Declaration is that. Literally, that is what Red sounds like and has always, you know, should have been, you know, what fans have always come to, you know, love and admire about Red. And it was just this time around, there was nobody saying, well, that's a cool song, but we need a softer song. We need this, or we need that, or we need this. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, we can write those, but this is what we wanted to write. And it doesn't mean we're not going to write the softer songs. You know, we've got a lot of stuff in the can, so like I said, but you know, it's just not a problem for us. We really do well together. Our team, you know, the guys that, you know, we write with, or, you know, Rob and I, our producer, wrote this entire record together, you know.
Wow.
And, you know, sometimes we have outside writers and sometimes we don't, but Rob and I tackled this whole thing. We did two songs with our old drummer, Joe Rickard, but the rest of the tracks, we did one track with Keith Whalen from Breaking Benjamin, and that was it. Everything else, Rob and I wrote everything together. So it wasn't even as big of a chore that, you know, it would, you know, would seem for bands to be able to write a record, but, you know, it's just natural for us, you know?
Yeah, you guys have been together so long that you guys just know each other
so well.
Yeah,
I mean, the three core members have been together. We've been on each other since third grade. We've been playing music since we were, we grew up together, you know? So, you know, we've been doing this a long time, and we really took a serious look at being musicians when we were in high school, so... You know, that's why we're still here. I mean, bands come and go, man. And a lot of times it's either money or turmoil, or the guys just, you know, when the guys just start hating each other or whatever, like, we just get along well and we know each other, we know each other's hearts, and it that all matters, you know?
Yeah, that's definitely something that's super important, especially with bands today, or bands across time, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. 100%.
So what tone were you guys looking for before you even entered the studio? Did you guys know, you guys knew down the road, this is what we want? Or was it like kind of wishy-washy?
Yeah, it's a good question. Our bass player, my twin brother Randy, he came up with the idea for Declaration. He thought, you know, it's kind of cool. This is our independence. You know, this is our Declaration of Independence. A declaration, you know, by definition, is a strong statement. That's all. Mm. That's all Declaration means. And that's what we wanted to. When we wrote the record, we're like, okay, what's a statement? What's going to be a statement? And our fans, just after our last our label record, our final effort on the label, they, you know, had a little bit more of a contemporary pop-ish rock sound, and it just didn't feel like us. You know, there's a lot of directional things that we explored, you know, but they want a loud, aggressive, in-their-face record, and that's exactly what we wrote, and it's exactly who we are, and I think people can hear just how, you know, you listen from track one through track 10, you're getting the idea. Red knows how to put together a story and make it aggressive, and this is just who these guys are and who they have always been. So I think people are seeing that it's not some sort of, you know, effort that's just like, well, let's appease the fans. It's like, this is just who we are. That's why the record was just such an easy task for us to, you know, to finish.
I love that. Yeah. So you said, I was reading what you're saying about the album, and you said you unlock more creativity each album. What did you think about this album after you completed the album? What did you discover is what I'm trying to get at.
We discovered, it's funny, when we always hide away up in Maine. We spend a lot of time on a ski mountain in Carabasset Valley, Maine, which is it's a mountain called Sugarloaf. It's a ski resort, but our producer's family has a cabin up there. So that's where we go. We disappear and we fly out there. And when we lock ourselves away, I mean, it's kind of cool. We spend a lot of time there. And it's funny, during the process of making a record, it just seems like there's some cool software that comes out that we've never tried before that kind of inspires us, you know, soundscapes and different sound designs that we use for the programming of the record. That's pretty integral and, you know, how we, you know, approach the record creatively. But this time around, it felt like a lot of the stories were birthed out of, like, almost not, I wouldn't say a dream, but conjuring up this maybe fictional, maybe non-fictional character, you know, and saying, okay, this is the story of this guy or this girl in this song. And, you know, Infidel was that song. Infidel came out that way, you know, and a lot of the songs were like that. It's like, let's tell a story with each. They're all mini stories that add up to one big story. So it was pretty cool that's a kind of the approach we took. Like, we didn't have a lot of imagery picked out or anything. We knew that with the Evening Hate, that song being in the can, we've always been big fans of what, you know, what war is. You know, war is scary, war is dangerous, war is inevitable, you know, war is endless. And no matter what, whether it's a physical war that our military is fighting or it's a mental, spiritual war that we're fighting, it's never ending. It's always going to be there. And I think Red has always dove into that so hard. And that helped a lot, too. So we made a lot of the stories about, okay, this is a guy that's in a trench and conflicted by, you know, he's more conflicted about what's going on in his heart and his mind than what's actually happening around him, you know? So we wrote a song like that, you know? So it's pretty cool that and it's funny that the lyrics came together pretty fast.
Yeah. So the stories really came from the songs being, you know, characters, really.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, if you listen to the songs or, you know, read the lyrics as the song plays on, you can actually, you know, picture yourself being that guy that's in that trench and the bombs are falling all around you. And this is what's going through your mind, you know?
Yeah, I love that.
It's pretty cool.
It's so immersive, the word I was
looking
for.
Very, very. Yes. Exactly. Like, become the character, become the person, you know, that this entity, I would say, that's the song, you know, characterized.
Right. So to get that, like, immersive feel, and I'm a guitarist, so I know guitarists love talking about their pedals, their gear. Did you use any new gears, specific pedals, to make that album sound, you know, different than the others?
I'm not a huge, like, I don't use a lot of gear. I think a lot of gear makes things complicated.
Right.
You know, there's pedals out there that are just so amazing and they're go-tos, you know what I mean? But I'm a big Kemper guy. I love all the digital effects that are available now. The reason being is that not only do they sound amazing and they're very difficult to distinguish between the real thing, digital, AKA copy,
right,
profile, they like to call it.
But yeah.
It's just so difficult now with the technology that's available that it doesn't sound like it's fake. To me, it's the new real. That is what music is now. And being able to, you know, close that gap from the studio to the stage is what's so important. It's like, I want the live show to sound like what you're hearing on the record, because that's what people fall in love with.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're going to hear all the time. You're listening to every single day, and on your way to the show, you know, that's what's happening. Kids are, you know, blasting the record on the way to the show, preparing themselves for what they're going to see live. And like, when then they get there and it's like, it doesn't sound like it, you know, the singer's not good. This takes away from the experience and it makes them less interested. So it's just so cool to be able to do that now with the studio. But as far as effects and pedals and stuff, man, I don't get too crazy with that stuff. I just don't. I just think Red's just got a straightforward sound. And, you know, we use little things like reverb and delay and stuff like that.
But that's,
you know, everybody's got that. You know, it's nothing special. We're not doing anything too crazy. We'll leave that to the DJs, you know.
So simplicity is the answer, you were saying.
Yeah, of course.
So as a guitarist, was there like a lick or a lead line in the album that just like really stuck out to you? Like, that's it, man.
Yeah, man, I would have to say the two songs that I'd say Cauterize is one.
Mm.
That's track three. And I would say a song called Float is definitely, there's just something about those songs and those BPMs, that the range we wrote those songs in. It's just, it's ridiculously low. There's a song that's in double drop C.
Oh, wow.
It's just low. It's ridiculous how low it is. And All For You is like that. The very first track on the record, that riff that comes in is just ridiculously low. And it's just candy to your ears. It's wild what metal fans love and rock fans are hearing them. And they're just like, how did they do that? And it's all trickery, but it's something that we can do live. And it's cool. So
I think
trickery, as in when you tune a guitar that low, it only goes so low before it gets really muddy. So you have to use a drop tune pedal. You have to do, you know, interesting things like that. So, but it's, you know, it's cool. That's what we do.
Yeah, definitely. So you were talking about recording and like how you're doing that stuff and all the stuff in the studio, making sure it sounds the same way it does on the album as on stage.
Yeah.
So while you were on tour recording, was that stressful trying to track and tour at the same time? Because I know you guys did a little bit of that.
Yeah, it can be. It can be a little stressful, but we've done it for long enough where you kind of find a way to make it happen. But studios, you don't have to be in a, you know, world-class studio to track guitars anymore. You know, I can do all my guitars and stuff on the road or in my home studio. So and Rob's a guitar player too, so that's helpful. Because I'm the only guitar player in the band, so when I've got another guy that's a guitar player, he can say, you know, hey, we should layer it with this or try that. Like, we put our heads together, and it's really cool like that. So, but tracking the parts, it was a challenge this time because of the tunings.
Right.
But because making those things, you know, sound proper and sound right, you know, it mattered, obviously, because of the clarity. You get those low tunings and they can get pretty muddy pretty fast. So it was a challenge to get that. But once we figured out, okay, this is what's going to work, and we just stuck with that.
That's awesome. So Michael said his favorite memory was how you guys finished the album while you got a break on tour in Salt Lake City. How did that go down?
We finished the record in Los Angeles, actually, not city.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. That might have been a misquote. But we actually did all the... We were on tour with us at the time, and we had a stop. We were in California, and we had a stop in Los Angeles. We had 2 days off. So in order to get... We had basically everything done up to that point except the live drums. So we programmed stuff and, you know, just to get the demos put together. But then, you know, obviously, it comes time to put the acoustic drums in there. That's what we did. We took 2 days in Los Angeles at a studio that we used for our fourth record with Howard Benson. So we all met up and all flew in and drove, and we left the tour bus at the last location and rented a car and drove ourselves, you know, up there to get Dan there super early and track the drums and get ready. And some of the songs Dan was actually hearing for the first time because we had made so many changes at the last minute. We're like, some of the parts he was hearing for the first time. So the poor guy had to, but he's a pro, man. He nailed it. You know, he gets in there and he hears it a few times and plays it a few times and he's ready to go. So that was a cool memory because we just, you know, we got to be there at, you know, a studio where we worked on our fourth record together, and we all lived in Los Angeles, you know, for the few months that we were making the record. We all stayed in an apartment together. We rented out and just to make the record. So it was a special time for us because we just got to go back there for the first time, and it's been almost 5 years.
That's awesome. So talking about touring and everything, I know there's a pandemic with the coronavirus. How does that affect your touring? I mean, have you gotten on the bandwagon of doing like live Instagram concerts and stuff like that?
We haven't done much of anything. The only thing we've done is an acoustic. We did an acoustic performance on the release day. It didn't go great, actually. We couldn't get the people that we needed to help us because it's just crazy right now. So we had a smaller setup and set it up the best we could, and we got in there. We had issues, of course, like any other,
right?
You know, any other any other band, we had issues. And but the issues, it was, you know, they were not insurmountable, but they were, you know, they were frustrating. But the only thing that mattered to us was being in front of our fans on the day of the release and to, you know, to interact the best we could, you know. And you know, it was interesting. We hadn't seen each other since with the tour we were on when this all started, canceled. So it's been almost a month or so. And you know, we even got in there and we couldn't, you know, glad hand each other. We had to kind of stay away from each other.
Right.
it was weird. And even the drummer, I mean, Dan couldn't even be there. We weren't about to fly him in. And this was the day that they announced that Tennessee is now, you know, on strict lockdown where you should only leave, you know, your home for essential travel only. And if you get pulled over, you know, you get fined or go to jail.
Right, exactly.
So we took the risk because we're just, man, we got to do this, you know.
Right.
And we all know each other. It's not like we're all strangers hanging out. It's like none of us are sick or anything like that. So we didn't feel like we were making too big of a mistake. And we were going to be a, you know, undisclosed location. But the cops still found us. They saw all the cars. You know, I'm sure they were up patrolling. They saw all the cars parked where we were at. And they came in the building and they found us. And they were not mean at all. They were just, hey, guys, we got to break this up. You know,
right, right.
We told them what we were doing. One of them was a fan, which was really cool. So that made it much easier. So no IDs had to be pulled out or, you know, there was no cuffs involved or anything.
Okay, that's good.
But yeah, it was cool. So it didn't go very smooth, but you know, it is what it is, considering what we're dealing with right now. You know, we didn't have time to pre-tape and do anything.
Right.
You know, there's bands out there that are pre-tape and stuff and release it to their fans. And this was way more organic. Like, we did everything completely live and we did the best we could. So we're down with the coronavirus. So it's got to be over soon because to do so.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully it all blows over within the next 3 or 4 weeks. Just hopefully, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Anthony. Once again, we're talking with Anthony Armstrong from the band Red. And one more question for you before we go. I'm going to play The War We Made by you guys. And is there anything that stood out to you with this song specifically?
We actually referenced our second record with this song. We had a song on that record called The Fight Inside, and it's just called Fight Inside. But that song was about, you know, the inner turmoil, the struggle between good and evil inside of our minds and our spirituality. So this song is about that. It's like, it's almost like pointing that finger, like, well, there is a fight inside, but the war that we made, you know, the things that we make that destroy our lives, we brought the war to our, you know, to our own front door, and we did it to ourselves. So it's just, it's a reflective song, you know. It's talking about how we did this. You know, we didn't do this. We didn't, the coronavirus, we didn't make that happen. I don't think we did that to ourselves.
Yeah.
But that's a little joke. But in all seriousness, it was, you know, a lot of the things that happened that are, you know, that are devastating in our lives are because of that. And you know, it's just because, and it's about self-reflection and actually, you know, owning up to, we're the reason this is happening. This is the war that we made.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Anthony. That was really deep. Thank you so much for your honest answers and everything and the opportunity to speak with you. I know you're a busy guy.
Yep. Take care.